Welcome to the State of Sound podcast, produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, a companion series to the blockbuster exhibit, The State of Sound, a world of music from Illinois.
Welcome to the State of Sound podcast. I'm your host, Chicago writer Dave Hoekstra. In this segment, we sit down with Melody Spann Cooper, chairman of Midway Broadcasting Corporation. We talk about her life in black media, the legacy of her father, Purvis Spann the Bluesman, the WVON Good Guys, and much more. For more information on other podcasts and our exhibit, please check out musicfromillinois.com. And now, here's our friend, Melody Spann Cooper.
My name is Melody Spann Cooper. I am chair and CEO of Midway Broadcasting Corporation. It's the parent company of the legendary WVON radio here in Chicago, celebrating its 60th anniversary this year. We also have WRLL 1450, which has a similar footprint of WVON, but it covers the Latino community. And we have Von TV, which is our digital streaming platform.
Very good. I didn't know it was the 60th anniversary.
Yes.
So I know about the family history, but in your own words, I guess with the 60th anniversary, kind of look back at the roots for me, first of all.
Oh, wow.
I knew your dad. So, yes. So talk about the origins of WVON.
Sure. Yeah. So WVON came to be because of two Polish immigrants known as Leonard and Filczek.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
They are the famed creators and founders of Chess Records, which was here in Chicago, right? This powerful music studio who delivered the likes of Muddy Waters and Little Howlin' Wolf and Etta James. Mm-hmm. But they also owned clubs in the black community. Now, you got to think about it. This was in the middle of the Great Migration. Black folks were moving into Chicago in droves. And the Chess Brothers were making a killing, right, in these clubs. But there was not one radio station that catered to this growing black metropolis. And so they looked around and they got an opportunity to buy a station. And their goal, though, was to only play records that were from Chess Records. Mm-hmm. And the FCC said, oh, no, cannot do that, right? And so as they were just really ingenious. These guys were just born entrepreneurs. So in addition to Chess Records, they decided to turn this radio station and to format it for the black community. And on April 1st, 1963, WVON went on the air as the voice of the Negro. Mm-hmm. And my dad was the second disc jockey hired.
Purvis Spann.
Purvis Spann, the blues man. Yeah. Uh-huh. A lot of people don't realize this, but it was Leonard Chess who gave him that moniker. And Leonard actually heard my dad. My dad was what they used to call brokering radio overnights because he drove a cab during the day, right? And he was, I think it was OPA. And he played the blues. Leonard Chess loved the blues, of course. I asked my dad to come over. My dad took the midnight shift there. He was on from 12 a.m. to 4 a.m. in the morning. Now think about that. In a station in Chicago, big city, you would think people would feel like, you know, they would poo-poo a midnight shift. My dad loved it. He loved it because it gave him all day to do those things that would really, you know, make him some money, because that's
your
what dad my dad
hustled.
Loved. My dad was amazing.
No vacations.
And he was just an entrepreneur. Yeah. He just loved business and making money. So during the day, he would promote concerts at the Regal Theater. He, along with another colleague, E. Rodney Jones, who was the program director at WVON. So for 10 years, from 1963 until 1974, as when AM radio was major and FM was not so, they owned Chicago. I mean, they owned the entertainment of Chicago. They owned the activism in Chicago, the social part of Chicago. It all landed at WVON. And that's what made it such a force, not only in Chicago, but across the country, because nobody had put together a formula like the Chess Brothers. They were known as the good guys,
yeah, right?
And imagine this, Out of that comes Don Cornelius. You look at this comedian, Roy Wood Jr.
Right.
His dad was Roy Wood, who did the news and editorial on WVON. He was talking about that on the air here just last week he was on, right? And talking about his dad's influence in Chicago and how he talked about this time, this moment in time in Chicago that was just so rich in his activism because of this station. So that's the origins of it.
Can you talk about, I knew Herb and I knew your dad, I did interviews for them for the paper.
Sure.
But they were, and this, we do this in the exhibit with other things about the importance of community. And they were heroes in the community. And the connection with the community was real strong. I mean, I know, in your own words, talk about what happened after the Dr. King riots and stuff.
Sure.
They calmed people down. Just talk about their role. They were leaders.
Yeah, absolutely they were. And, you know, back then, you know, all of these corporations were hiring all of these consultants and taking the fun out of our business. Mm-hmm. They had fun, right? And so they were celebrities. I remember going places. I was very young when my dad was at the height of his Purvis Band, the blues man part of his life. But I just remember everywhere we went, we were special. We were Purvis Band's family, right? They were celebrities in this city. Herb Kent could have a sock hop and get 3,000 and 4,000 kids out, right?
Yeah.
Everything they touched. I have pictures of them playing the Harlem Globetrotters at the amphitheater. 20,000 people coming out to see a basketball game between the Harlem Globetrotters and the good guys.
Yeah, right.
I mean, give me a break, right?
Yeah.
So they own the pulse of this city. And there goes the nation, because again, you've never seen anything like this. When Motown Records would put a song out, the first place it would come was to Chicago. And Berry Gordy would tell you, he had a deal with VON because if it went over big in Chicago, he knew he had a hit all over the country. You know, so that's the kind of power that this station wielded back then. And because it was at the height of civil rights, right? Because it was, the city was ripe with growth, right? It just all collided to make something really special. And then from that, all of them had outside gigs, Herb Kent and the Young People, my dad and E. Rodney Jones with the Regal and the Burning Spear.
Yeah, right.
And then here's Don Cornelius, right? Yeah. Don Cornelius was, people never understood how Don Cornelius got to VON. He was a police officer in the city of Chicago. And Roy Wood, he pulled Roy Wood over, right?
Yeah.
And he hears this big voice and he's like, you know, you should be on radio. And people would say, well, you was just trying to get out of paying a ticket, right? But he joined the newsroom at WVON. But he saw an opportunity for young people to dance and get on TV and dance. And he did it with Channel 26, which is WCIU.
Sure, right.
So you see all of this, all of the vestiges of this station. When we call into a 591 line, dedicated line for radio, it's because of WVON. When Medgar Evers got killed, and on the west side of Chicago, there were so many calls coming into Wesley South's talk show, it knocked out the phone system on the west side of Chicago for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So Ma Bell had to go and say, we got to do something about this. Yeah. This should never happen again. And that's when they came up with dedicated service for call-ins for radio stations.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's got its footprint on so many, in so many ways,
that
it has grown from being a radio station to really being a community connector. It's the original social media.
Right.
It is the place where Black people in particular go to talk about what's happening in their side of town or in America, right? And there's no wonder that you get a Carol Moseley Braun, the first Black female senator out of Chicago. A Barack Obama becomes president of the United States of America. Right? I'm not saying that VON is the only reason, but it's that fertile soil that we continue to toil that helps all of these movements happen. Harold Washington, we're on our fourth Black mayor here, right?
Yeah. I have here. State Senator Obama filled in as an announcer.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that in 2002.
Listen, who knew?
How did that happen?
So We're in that same generation, mm-hmm. right? And people don't realize this, but Dave, but Barack was having a hard time landing as he began his political pursuits. But I was young and I was programming the station, and we kind of traveled in the same circles. And we had gotten to know Barack before he got into politics. Barack actually was leading something that was about voting. It was a Project Vote organization that Ed Gardner, who, as you know, financed Harold Washington's right. campaign, had put together to get young people out to vote. And he used the station often as a platform. So he didn't just use the station. Barack used to call the station. He'd call in, right? He was at ground level. Uh-huh. And so as he began to you know, come up in the world and get more exposure, I'm like, you know, you should do a show or two. He was amazing.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, my God. He was just amazing. And I always told him, hey, if this politics thing doesn't work out for you, right? And so that is how he did it. But I got something else to tell you.
Yeah.
Brandon Johnson did the same thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Brandon Johnson did shows on VON. Uh-huh. He started as part of the Chicago Teachers Union. But then we offered him a show. We had an hour on Sunday. He wanted to do it so much. We just give him the hour. What I loved about Brandon, he showed up every Sunday, whether it was Christmas, no matter what it was, he did the show. And then he would often fill in for the morning host. So they all have a touch point because VON is community. That's what it is. Yeah. That's why it's still around.
This jumps ahead to some of the stuff I was going to ask you.
Sure.
But I want to keep it linear. You know, there's stuff in the newspapers you read now and you hear about AM radio going away.
Yeah.
But, I mean, here, these stories you're telling, there's still a tight connection with the community.
Sure.
Actually, I'm going to jump ahead with that. So talk about your response to AM radio going away and how you navigate that.
Yeah. So first of all, AM radio will never go away because while this is a big deal, 2/3 of our listenership now consume us digitally on iHeart apps.
Okay.
We have our own app now that we've just developed. So the ways that you get it, think about when you get in these new cars, they all are offering you apps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy for us to find. Here is the danger of AM going away though. I want you to go back to 9/11. When everybody had those signals on the top of those buildings, who carried the message for people in their cars? It was the big radio station, the AM radio station in New York.
Yeah.
Nobody else could reach the people. So in emergency situations, not just for us in urban areas, but rural communities, it is so hyperlocal.
Yeah.
It is so standalone. If you look at our signals now, right? Most of the signals are at the Sears Tower. Our signal is at 87th Street for VON, and it's on 33rd for WRLL.
Uh-huh.
There's no threat, immediate threat to being able to reach people. That has to matter in emergency situations. Here's the biggest danger piece, though, for somebody like me. There are so few minority owners of media, right? And for radio, you will find a large bulk of them in cities like Mississippi, down in the Delta, and other areas that are Black-owned with AM signals. So listen, we're fighting enough trying to compete with these with Disney and iHearts in the big places in the world. So we yet have another thing to have to explain to these advertisers who are already kicking our butts because, you know, the numbers aren't there. Now we won't have a signal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the danger of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the best you can come up with is you are intelligent enough to create a battery to move a car. And you can't figure out a way to keep AM on your dial.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Give me a break.
How many Black-owned stations were there when you started?
Oh, wow. So at the height, it was 202.
Yeah.
You are now down to 113, and a large bulk of those are owned by Urban One, which is Kathy Hughes Station, which is Black-owned, of course, uh-huh. which is great. But that independent voice, that presence, is just in many of these areas have been diluted. And so you're looking at, and that goes across the spectrum. That's even for TV stations, you know,
right.
Very few Black-owned TV stations, right?
Yeah.
When you think about there's 46 million of us in this country, We deserve to have these platforms
for, sure.
for our authentic voices. And the FCC, I'm working on the FCC commission right now on equity and diversity and inclusion to talk about that. You know, you have to get in. I don't want to take you down that road because it's a political road, right? In terms of minority tax certificates. But and the genie is out the bottle, because how do you go to these big conglomerates and say, hey, you know, this is no longer fair. You've got to give up signals. They're not going to do that. But how do we incentivize people to do business with not only Blacks, but Latinos, Asians are need a voice. The indigenous natives need a voice, mm-hmm. right? That's what radio was designed to do, was to serve communities. So everybody should be at this table and be allowed to play. And unfortunately, it's gone from community to corporate, mm-hmm. to capitalism. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's breaking down. And Congress has got to get involved in this mm-hmm. because they allowed it to happen.
What about, going off script here, what about like young talents and how you find, and I'm going to double ask that question, because the good guys and your dad, I mean, you listen to some of your dad's tapes, he was like an early rapper.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, he had that rhythm, yeah. I remember reading Herb Kent, talking to Herb Kent about when he started, he almost sounded like a white guy,
yeah.
but you guys, WVN had such distinct voices
yeah.
and personalities, and it was okay to sound Black.
That's
and,
right.
And talk street and stuff. Oh, talk about that part of the history, and then talk about young people coming up. Do they
yeah.
are they still able to have their own voice, or do they have to be polished, I guess?
No, they don't.
Yeah.
And it's just showing up authentically, because we talked about all of them back then. They all had their individual, you know, individualism. Purvis Spann, the blues
yeah.
man. E. Rodney Jones, the mad lad.
Yeah.
Herb Kent, the cool gent. They all had their identifiable personalities. I think you find that now more than anything. But they've got more platforms to deliver it on, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about what some of these young people, influencers they're calling
yeah,
them,
right?
Right?
Yeah, right?
And what they're doing in social media and what they're doing digitally to have their own space and place in the world, right? But they become, they're so microfied. I guess that's the best
yeah,
way
mm-hmm.
to put it. They're microfied. You'll get 100,000 of them here, you know, but in mass media, this is why radio and TV will never go away. To reach the masses in a profound, in a big way, you need these edifices that reach the masses. So I'm not taking anything away. I love the creativity of it. I love these young curators. You know, they're making movies on phones now.
Yeah, right.
Think about
yeah,
that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But what about where are they going to place them? Who's going to distribute them? You know, and so I think we are at a point in the creation where the big has to take notes from the small, mm-hmm. and the small have got to learn to get with the big. I think it's a fascinating time
mm-hmm.
in how we imagine content and how we receive content. There's no rules anymore. There's no right or wrong. So I love it all. The only part I don't like is competing against it, right? Because I think they set such unrealistic thresholds for young curators. You can't expect them to come in and be able to deliver 500 million impressions. Give me a break, right? So how are they able to make money and be honored on a smaller scale? And I think when you look at some of the measurables that Meta and some of the others are doing in order to compensate them for it, I think it's a great idea, which challenges the big guys to think small,
mm-hmm.
you know, to start looking at streaming. I am shocked now to watch big networks say, hey, go to my streaming network, right? So it's interesting what's happening. And I hope that it continues to just you know, to offer opportunity for people who ordinarily, think about that. When my dad and them were coming up, wasn't a lot of room for disc jockeys to get in.
Yeah.
Now everybody, internet radio, it's
yeah.
all kind of things,
yeah.
you know, that gives people an opportunity.
Your dad passed away in 2022.
Yes, last year.
89
yep.
years old.
Mm-hmm.
Was this, I have in my notes, you began working at VON at age 15.
Oh.
So where I'm going with that is, was this predestined for you? I mean, was it something that was just
you know,
in your
hindsight,
blood?
Yes,
yeah.
I think so. Was it in my blood? No. Not this way. I wanted to be in media, but I tell Cheryl Burton all the time, she has my job and my paycheck, okay? But my dad did not want me to be a journalist. He wanted, I think he really wanted me to come and run his business. It's four of us. I'm the only one that's in the business, right? He wanted me to be a lawyer. And my dad was so strong-willed. He set out on a trajectory for all of that to be. But in hindsight, looking back, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I have taken my dad's company and multiplied it, right? And I think that's what parents want you to do, right? But I don't know that that was something I set out to do. I set out to do it, but I'm glad that I did it.
This is just radio or a podcast, but we're on the Chicago River, and there's a view of the Chicago skyline. Did your dad, how long have you been in this space?
I've been here for 3 years.
Did your dad ever see it? He didn't make it? Okay.
No, because, you know.
He had Alzheimer's, right?
Right. Yeah, he was in the bed for 8 or 9 years.
Yeah, right.
You know, took great care of him, but I would have loved for him to see it.
I just wonder what his dream, you know.
Can I tell you a story, though?
Yeah, sure.
Yesterday, so we're working on a documentary for him, for Vaughn TV.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. And I'm sitting in my office, and you see this wonderful view. And a red cardinal landed on the fence and is looking dead at me, right? As we're talking about this documentary that we're putting together for him. And I'm talking to the producer. I'm saying, oh, my God, the most beautiful bird is sitting here staring at me. I said, it's a red bird. And I tried to grab my camera and take a picture. And she said, that's your dad.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it touched me so much,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so it's those instances where I know he's proud, where he didn't get to see it. But imagine this, a man from Itabena, Mississippi,
yeah, right,
coming here, right, and just establishing something that is so powerful. So I do this not thinking that I've done anything special, but doing it knowing I could not have done this without him.
Sure.
And I just work every day to keep his legacy alive and to make him proud and to serve. That's it. That's what he taught us, service. I grew up, so I was born in Englewood, 67th Street. Moved to Auburn Gresham, where my parents still live, where my mom still lives. She's been in that house for 60 years.
Yeah, they were married 67?
68, yes.
68 years.
Well, it's been 67 years when he died.
Yeah.
Mom's still in the home. And now I live in the South Loop. I've never moved from the South Side of Chicago, right? I tell people I'm never going to move past Madison Avenue.
Yeah,
right? But I love this city. My daddy taught me to love this city. It's a great city. It's got bumps and bruises like any big major city now. But think about what he was able to establish. Where else could this happen, right? And so that's the beauty of it. I want to tell you something else, too, because we start talking about music, because the station now is a talk station, still community focused. But music was so much a part of our family.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to ask if musicians came to the house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to share with
you.
And now I think about it, like I was telling you, I didn't realize who my dad was. I just knew he was special. But it was nothing to walk downstairs and B.B. King is at our house. Johnny Taylor, Al Green, Aretha Franklin on the phone. Those were his friends.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, those were, that is, you could, up until 15 years ago, I guess, James Brown and my dad talked weekly. I mean, they were friends, right? And so I grew up around entertainers. And even now, it's not a big deal for me to, you know, I don't have I got to meet this person. I got to meet that person. I've never felt compelled because I've always felt like, you know, it's an aligned circle, you know, that I would meet anybody. But there was always a celebrity part of our existence that was just so unique, you know, but my dad made so normal. He made it so normal. It wasn't like, you know, that's a big deal that's Aretha Franklin. It was just Aretha to him, you know. And I love that because he level set for all of us. You won't find any of his children in a space where we think that we are bigger or better than anybody. He taught us, this was his line. I want you to treat the prisoner as well as you would the president.
Wow.
Wow. How about that, right?
Yeah.
And so, and that's just how we were taught to operate, you know. But it was fascinating now looking back to say the greatness we've been around, you know, and to have experienced that because of him.
For a drop-in, do you have a favorite? B.B. King, James Brown, off the top
of
your
God.
Head? Al Green?
Oh, my God. Still listen to Al Green. Yeah. My favorite is Johnny Taylor.
Okay.
I have fallen in love with Johnny Taylor, right? I didn't when I was young because my mama used to listen to Al Green and Johnny Taylor all the time.
Cheaper to Keeper. I mean, pick a Johnny Taylor song.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That I really love. We're Getting Careless with Our Love.
Sure. Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Don't you leave. I want to hold you a little longer.
I just have a play. I just put a playlist together with all Johnny Taylor songs. So I'm looking for a resurgence of him. He'd be a great movie. And to think about, you know, he replaced Sam Cooke in The Soul Stirrers, right?
Yeah.
In this, I have learned to almost be a historian around a lot of these guys, too, that I love so much, you know, learning the stories of them. We had the big debate on VON whether... they call him the Godfather of Soul. Was James Brown soul or was he funk? You know what I mean?
Right.
It was soul. So it's even though it's not music anymore, it's still a place. The 50th anniversary is hip hop. Hip hop is this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
MC Light is she loves this station, you know? And so, and to think about her being like maybe the first woman out there, right, who was rapping from New York, that she'd be connected to the station. So it's an amazing, I think I always say that VON is the essential storyteller of our culture, of our music, of our politics, of how we navigate in America. You will find that story here.
I had this, I was going to save this at the end, but do you go out stepping?
Oh, listen,
you cannot
come from Chicago and not step, babe. You gotta step, right?
Talk about stepping a little bit.
It's amazing. Stepping, house music, all of that.
Yeah.
Born here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't go anywhere. So I spent a lot of time
in Long Beach. Did you go stepping?
I wasn't old enough to go stepping.
I know it's kind of an old person thing now, right?
But no, people still step.
All right.
You just can't come from Chicago and not step.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about stepping. It's not... a particular dance, it's a style.
Yeah, right.
It's in how you look stepping. It's in the shoes you wear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a culture within itself. So of course you step. And you are so proud when you go to other cities to say you're from Chicago and they turn on music and you step.
Yeah. Yeah, tell the listeners what, I'm a white guy, but I mean, Twine Time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, talk about what
you Alvin Cash.
Yeah,
Alvin Cash. Oh, yeah. Well, they used to call it something else then. My mom used to call it bopping.
Uh-huh.
They bopped.
Yeah.
She came out of DuSable High School. And so they would, and some people called it two-step in other cities. But you bopped here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then Alvin Cash, he had his own dance around
it. Right.
The Twine Time, but... you find so much culture that is just part of who we are in Chicago in terms of really its music. And it's what kind of disappoints me that we don't have more blues clubs here, right? That black folks go to when you think the Checkerboard was at 43rd Street.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the fact that the Rolling Stones would go there, right? To have jam sessions.
Mm-hmm.
That means something to the world, right? And so I'm excited about the work that the city is starting to do with amplifying that which its origins are here.
Well, that's what
right?
we're trying to do with this.
I know.
Just to pay homage, which I don't think the city does the best job sometimes,
yeah.
of its musical history.
Yeah.
Gotta
own it.
Yeah.
When you think about Record Row, before we moved here, we were actually looking at a building that I would later learn was the home of VJ Records.
Right.
Right there at 14th
and
Michigan.
That's where the coffee shop is now?
It's the coffee shop.
Right.
I looked at moving the station in that building, right? So if you look at Brunswick Records was there.
Yeah.
If you look at all of the talent that came out of music in Chicago, Record Row, and its connectivity to this station and other stations, I just think it's a fascinating cultural landscape by which, you know, that this city participated in. I don't know that you'll find it anywhere else. Not like it was here.
Mm-hmm. Couple more things and we'll be done. Thanks for being so generous.
Oh, no. Sure, I'm having a ball.
I saw this book. You should write a book about your life in the pandemic.
That's funny. That's
let's
a business
let's talk
book.
About this.
That's a business book.
Yeah, well, I didn't know about it. Look at, I mean, how well researched that is. The Girlfriend's Guide to Closing the deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this from my boss, Lance Towser. The Girlfriend's Guide. When did
it's
you
a
write
good book.
When
I wrote it in 2019.
Okay.
Right before the pandemic set in. So it got pandemic, and that's why we didn't hear any more noise about it than we did. But it's semi-autobiographical. I talk about my dad, but I really talked about him making me president of a company when I was 30 years old.
Kind of goes where I was going to go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, yeah. In the third largest market in media. And me just not feeling like I had a voice at the table and how I found my voice. And women go through that, especially Black women, right? Being in a room full of suits, men in this industry that run this industry, and how I had to muscle up. I had to muscle up. And I talk about that in the book.
That was my question. Yep. Being a woman, I mean, you just walked right into my question. Being a woman and a woman of color, what were the challenges for you?
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's a heavy question.
You know, the challenges were, they all were me. It's just being insecure and my power. Didn't know my power. Because you got to understand, I've lived a very insular life. I've only had one other job. My whole life has been here. And so for now, for me to come out of here and now go and sit at ABC or NBC or CBS with my peers, they were my peers. I didn't see it that way, right? I just thought they were so much bigger, smarter, richer. I was very intimidating. And I had to grow into that. I had to strengthen that muscle. And I think no matter what industry, when I was coming up, that happened in all industries for young women, right? And I wrote this book to help young women find their voice. Now I think women are, because you see them now in social media, everybody's strong, everybody knows everything, they got all the answers, right? But showing up in your authentic voice and being okay with it, I had to do some work on that. And I talked about that in finding that voice. And now I just, last year, I was the chair of the Illinois Broadcasters Association. Imagine that. Imagine me being the chair of all of the media companies in the state of Illinois. And I felt right at home. I just felt right at home. And I've gotten to the point, because I've matured to that, but I've also done the work to understand that how I show up is okay. Because I, for pound, I measure up. I'm smart. I am everything that I thought they were. Right? And more, because I think women bring an innate, nurturing vision that makes the table better. We get to look at it from a lens that oftentimes our men counterparts are not looking at. And so having women at the table, just having different voices and cultures at the table, makes the table so much more richer.
Were there periods in your life when you were younger that you got, I mean, everybody goes to this, I suppose, but you got angry? You got frustrated?
Oh, yeah. I've cried.
Yeah.
I mean, I've cried about it. And I hesitate as I'm telling you about it because a lot of it is work I had to do for myself. But a lot of it was we were living and still to some degree are living in a world where women have to show up, but still be allowed to be women. Mm-hmm. Have to show up and still be allowed to be a woman, right? And be heard. And it's a lesson that my male counterparts who I love, they're learning. Mm-hmm. They're learning. You have to think men have been around for the most part, only a few women in their professional life and they've been their secretaries. Mm-hmm. They've been the worker bees there. What about when you're the strategist? What about when you are the person that they have to answer to? And I think you add that and you add all of this Me Too and men are juggling because women are thinkers. I was on the phone with my husband today, right? His friends are celebrating one of their friends' birthdays in Vegas. I am planning a dinner and for them to go watch the basketball and I'm way ahead of him. I'm going places he ain't. You understand? Because that's what we do. They just think dinner and basketball, right?
Yeah.
So the ability to fill in that gap there, right? And still hold your own as the strategist and as a person who can sit and talk P&Ls, who talk long-term about future. It's just an amazing time, and we both have to give each other grace in it. Think about it. We're in a time now where if somebody says, Melody, I love that dress, he's almost like, oh, did I say the wrong thing? How did we get here, right?
Yeah.
How did we get here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I empathize with them on that side. I don't know if I empathize, but I definitely sympathize because I don't want to be in a world when a man can't hug me when I walk in the room. Or they've got to be concerned and feel so uptight about. Because what's going to end up happening, Dave, the table will get smaller. They'll just stop inviting me.
Yeah.
We don't want to go back there.
Yeah, right.
I want to be at the boardroom table. I want to learn from them. I want to help them get better. So that's where I think, where I think I show up and what I try to talk about in my book about how women show up.
Were there mentors for you? I mean, of course, we can talk about your parents, but were there people in the business? I'm just going off the top of my head, like maybe Mary D., maybe Yvonne Daniels.
Oh, great question.
Did you ask them questions?
Wanda Wells.
You
remember Wanda?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wanda Wells was amazing with me. She helped me understand it from such a different lens. Art Norman.
Oh, yeah.
Art Norman was amazing with me.
Yeah.
Art Norman was listening to VON and I was doing the news because I was going to be Cheryl Burton, remember?
Yeah.
And so I'm doing the news and not a good job of it. And he called and said, you know what? I want to intern with you, just to help me, right? At baseline. So there's always mentors and those were the two that come to mind right away. But there's so many people who have touched my life and been important to it. And check this out. My mother, who only worked 3 years of her entire life outside of being a homemaker, fascinating thinker to help me just, baseline, understand common sense. You can have all the book sense in the world, but the common sense of life and understanding that all I'm receiving has nothing to do with me. And my interaction with people. Sometimes people are going through hell and what they're bringing to you has nothing to do with you. So don't take that on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every time someone says something about you, it's not about you, right? Mm-hmm. My mother has helped me understand that in such a big way, right? And that's knowledge she has just from being at our kitchen table.
Yeah, right. That was the second part of my question.
Yeah.
What lessons you'll learn from them.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
My baby don't stand no cheating, my baby. Oh, no, she don't stand.
This again, there's going to be people listening to this who don't know anything about your family history, but the Jacksons was managed by your dad and Marshall Thompson. That was before they, so talk about that.
So I got to tell you, Marshall Thompson from the Shy Lights.
Right.
So we have a home in Vegas. Marshall came over Christmas. We had the best time.
This past Christmas.
Oh, my God. Now, you want to hear some history? That's your interview.
Yeah.
To know that he's still at that age and he still has all his faculties and he's able to tell you such a rich history, right? So I just had to throw that in. I'm still in touch with a lot of my dad friends, the ones that are listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you asked me about the Jackson Five. Yeah. So this is my dad's story. Joe would bring them over Burning Spear.
Yeah.
And my dad used to have talent shows there.
Otis Clay always talked about the Burning Spear.
Spear. I got to tell you a story about the Burning Spear, too. Because I was very young.
Otis always talked about when Led Zeppelin came in.
Oh, see?
I
would hear these stories, just like I heard this one about the Jackson 5. And the Jackson 5 won a talent contest there. And my dad said that he managed them for a while. So I don't know that much because I was so little back then. But I tell you who else won a talent show there. Chaka Khan won a talent show there. Minnie Riperton used to come to the Burning Spear. So you got all of these local people who are coming through this club. But let me tell you something about the Burning Spear. And it wraps around a story. Burning Spear had a riser for a stage. You could hit a button. Stage would come out and go up. And the people would sit there, and my dad would have all of this great talent, Gladys Knight, all of these people would come to the Burning Spear. And he'd have them in the room so tight, they had to sit sideways at the table.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It was packed there, right? And my dad's office was next door, up top from a bar. So the Burning Spear would be closed, but next door would be a tavern where people would come in. My dad's office upstairs. And I would love to go to work with him because I could run through the Burning Spear. I could smell it. It was is amazing. I could hit the in the stage and run up, and I'd just run, run, run. I'd go, and my uncle worked there. He was the bartender. And you know, we'd wash glasses because I just wanted to be helpful. I just wanted to stay. And I remember the people showing up for the concerts at night. And my dad never forgot I was with him. He would always send me home. And he had a bodyguard who was a police officer who went on to become an alderman, Ernest Jones.
Okay,
he was alderman in the 20th Ward. He's my dad's bodyguard. And my dad would never, by 8:30 or 9 o'clock, take Melody home. And it would just be, oh, why can't I stay? Wonderful story about the character of my dad in raising us. Because I wanted to work. And I'd gone in the bathroom at the Burning Spear, and the lady was there cleaning up. And I'm cleaning the toilets. And the woman turns around, and she sees me. She says, oh, no, you can't do that. And my dad is coming up. He said, no, let her. I want her to be comfortable doing anything. It's okay. And I'll never forget that story. That was just who he is. No big me's, little you's. If you met Purvis, you were going to meet him at his authentic self, whether he was downtown or whether he was on 83rd Street.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the beauty of who he was and what he built.
Yeah.
People feel home here.
Yeah.
They just feel at home.
Where was the Burning Spear again?
55th and Stony Island.
Yeah,
it was the old Club de Lisa.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
You hear about all these old clubs and stuff?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was the old Club de Lisa.
So the Jacksons came through there.
Yeah,
they
came there. They did their talent show right there. That's where they won their talent show before they went to New York.
Yeah.
Right? And before they came up with the fact that Dinah Ross discovered them.
Yeah, right, right, right. Then the last thing, just again for history. So what happens when VON gets sold? I just want to go a little bit in the XOL stuff.
Oh, the XOL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah. So
70, 19...
And I don't know how much is still used, but I
No, but watch this. 1974, again, FM is starting to boom. The Chess Brothers, Leonard Chess died in 1969, had a heart attack right there in McKenzie.
Yeah.
Family sold it. I think he sold it to Globetrotter Communications. Globetrotter sold it to Gillette. Did you know that Potter Palmer and them owned they owned WVON for a while.
I didn't know that.
The Chess Brothers sold it. They paid, they sold VON, I think, for $8 or $9 million. Crazy back then. Imagine that, right? And so they came in, the last group that owned them came in and fired all of the disc jockeys that were on, all the original good guys, right? So my dad had talked to Wesley South, and Mr. South, because he did the talk show, he was connected to all the politicians. And they had moved WVON to the 1390 signal. So the 1450 signal was dark.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah, right.
So my dad and Wesley got together, decided to file for this 1450 signal. At the same time, there was a Polish group who had filed for it. So my dad, there was a Black-owned station now in Chicago with JPC, but there were no Polish-owned stations. So they got together with the Magala family and said, why don't we share the signal? The FCC approved it. So we went on the air in 1981, I think it was, as WXOL, because VON had moved to 1390, right? So we're on the air in this part-time station now because we're sharing the signal. We've got 15 hours, they've got 9. And it stayed that way until 2 years ago. Yeah, the Magalas went belly up. And now we've got this 24-hour. We were the last station in the country that was sharing a signal in the entire USA.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, till 2 years ago, 2021. Wow. So now it's 24 hours. But how we got the call letters back was Marv Dyson was running WGCI. It's the hottest thing in Chicago now, right?
Right.
It's so hot that he decides that the VON call letters are no longer useful. So he decides to change his 1390 signal to WGCI-AM. We got word that he dropped the call letters, and my dad filed, and Mr. South filed for him the next day and got the call letters back.
Okay.
So that's how VON got back to 1450.
Okay. Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Isn't that a weird story?
I didn't know that story.
Yeah. And so then when we did the deal, when I did the deal with iHeart to get to 1690, right, I moved the VON call letters to 1690, and their station that they have, which was WRLL, I took the call letters from WI. So we did a swap of call letters. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So then after the 74, 75 thing happened, he went on XOL, right?
Who?
Your dad.
Yeah, he was on E. Rodney Jones. Yeah, Some of the older guys came back. Yeah. Right. Okay. And they went through various formats.
Yeah.
They tried to, I think, resurrect what they were doing.
What they were doing before.
Right, on VON. And, you know, the time had passed. And then they started playing gospel on VON. And then Harold Washington runs for mayor. It's hot. People are talking. Kathy Hughes was killing it in WOL in Washington, D.C. during a Black Talk format. And so that's how we get back to the Black Talk format. Yeah. And we've been talking ever since.
This has been the State of Sound podcast produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. To hear other episodes and more information about the exhibit, The State of Sound, A World of Music from Illinois, visit musicfromillinois.com.